Hey, what's up now?
Brother, what's up?
This is a groovy party, man.
Yeah, brother, like, stop right on.
Well, good morning this morning. Well, those of you who are expecting Earl Ingram's deep voice to interrupt this music are going to be disappointed this morning. Earl can't be with us. This is Sandy Williams sitting in for Earl. Hi, Sam. How are you this morning?
Good morning, Sandy. It's good to see you.
Well, it's good to see you. I'm hopeful that Earl will be able to return shortly, but he's had some difficulties that are not personal. But anyway, he can't be here today.
Yeah, I appreciate you filling in. I know a lot of people appreciate your ideas and words just as much as Earl. If not, don't tell him I said this now. More.
Yeah. Oh, golly. Yeah, we'll keep that one a secret. I'm not sure that's true either. So, you know, normally our Earl starts out by talking about the weather, but it's not that much to talk about other than the fact that the sun has made a reappearance the last couple of days. That's a hopeful thing.
It's about time, that's for sure.
Yeah, not terribly warm. I coach boys rowing, and at least yesterday we had sun out on the water. I've been going out on the water sometimes when it's very, very cold. Let me tell you, it's you can't be colder than you are sitting in a boat on the Milwaukee River when it's 40 degrees and raining. That's as ugly as it gets. But, you know, I volunteer, so it's I'm asking for it. And then we usually jump to the Bucks, but there's no Bucks news other than the fact that the last game they had was kind of a stinker. And maybe this Saturday they'll make amends for that. I could jump to the Brewers, but I don't know anything about the Brewers. And Sam, do you follow anything about the Brewers?
I am not the most sporty gal out there. And my boyfriend is a Chicago native, so I'm kept up more with the other teams, unfortunately.
Oh yeah, yeah. Like the Cubs and the Bears.
Right.
The Bears. But well, anyway, so you know, we can get that light-handed banner behind us because I suspect that the world is sort of closing in on our listeners. It seems to be closing in on me at least. You know, we've got things that are happening across the big pond in Ukraine that seem to be horrible and grabbing the news every day, and it is horrible, and it should be grabbing the news, but now we've got things much closer to home. We've got things that happen when we go to the grocery store every day and watch our prices go up, or when we have to renegotiate our rent for leases, and our landlords are driving our leases up, our rent costs up. We've got cars that are scarce and used cars that are getting more expensive. So, you know, we've got our pocketbook talking to us just about every day, telling us that there's something to worry about. And that now we're getting warned about COVID again. And, you know, apparently the newest version of COVID, we keep coming out with new versions. It's like women's styles, except they're happening more quickly, I think. And we've got the new version of COVID, which apparently the old version Omicron didn't make us immune to. And so now the question is, how sick do we get from the new version? Because maybe everyone's going to get it. There's plenty to worry about. School loans look like a bright spot, but we've got to see whether a bright spot for the people who have school loans and still have them outstanding. There are those who paid them off themselves who are going to be somewhat chagrined and upset by people getting it forgiven. And then there's a question as to what size loans the executive, the president, would have the ability to forgive. So we've got that issue as well. So I think we've got a number of things to talk about this morning. I thought we might start with the economy, because the economy is something that touches all of us, and it sort of hangs a cloud over our future as well. And, you know, we've got a bunch of things going on in the economy that people talk about and headlines grab. We've got interest rates, for whatever that means to the people. We've got inflation, and inflation is obviously entwined with a lot of things. It's been entwined with COVID, and it's been entwined with the war in Ukraine, and now it's just plain the rubber hitting the road at home with prices going up. So I thought I'd start with that issue and see if we could shed some light on what it is that's going on. You know, yesterday the Federal Reserve is the part of the government that has responsibility for essentially banking and interacting with the banks in the United States, setting up a loan rate that is the rate at which the government lends money to banks, which the banks then can use to turn around and lend money to the people. And it essentially supplements the savings and checking account money that's held in banks. And the Federal Reserve has this opportunity to reset the rate at which they lend money, and that's the Federal Reserve rate. And the Fed rate yesterday rose 0.5%. And that action is taken pursuant to the direction of the Federal Reserve Chairman, who's a guy named Powell. And Mr. Powell announced yesterday that they were taking the action to raise the rate 0.5%. What does that mean? Well, it means that the rate at which banks borrow money has now gone up, and which it also means the rate at which people can borrow money short term has very likely gone up as well. And so we've had a circumstance for the last years, ever since the pandemic began, and really ever since the deep recession of 2008, where interest rates in this country have been almost non-existent, where the Fed rate has been in the neighborhood of zero, actually, and the rate at which banks could then borrow money was essentially free money, and the banks were free to lend money, but there wasn't a lot of demand for borrowing because of the recession. And so what did that do? That drove mortgage rates way down. And with mortgage rates very cheap, people could look at their budgets to decide how much they could pay for a house, and they could load in the monthly payment they had on their mortgage, and with very low interest rates on their mortgage, the mortgage monthly payment was low enough to allow them to afford more and more expensive housing. And what did that do? Well, that drove the price of housing up. And that had kind of a dual effect. It made the people who own houses very happy because they suddenly felt like they had more wealth. And it made it possible for more and more people to borrow money to buy houses, which increased the demand for housing. So in the last year and a half, we've had a real boom in the price of housing, which has made it possible for some people who own houses to sell their houses and reap a big reward. It's also made it more and more difficult for people to enter the housing market, particularly if the interest rates go up. So now we have the process of interest rates going up. Mortgage rates have climbed above 4% in the neighborhood of 5%. And so now we've got higher costs for borrowing money, making it more expensive to buy homes, making it less possible for people to buy those homes that have gotten so expensive on the market. So now we face a period in which there's a concern that this rise in home values is going to turn into a bubble, possibly, and we'll end up with a falling prices of homes as the result of this increased cost of buying. And I'm confident that there are listeners out there who are experiencing this issue of home buying and home purchasing. For a while, the new home buyers, the ones who were getting in for the first time, were getting their feet wet by learning what it was like to lose the bidding war on a home. And they began to jump into home bidding with some enthusiasm based on the low interest rate money they could borrow. And that process is about to end, I suspect. And the Fed is trying to pour cold water on this process of bidding prices up too rapidly. The clearest one, the one you can see most clearly it happening to, will be houses, because they are highly dependent on the cost of the borrowed money to buy a house. But it should also have an impact on car loans and the ability to buy cars, particularly used cars, where there have been a substantial increase in the lending for people to buy their used cars. So that should have an impact on the price of used cars. All of this inflation has been affected not only by the easy money from low interest, but more recently, it's been affected by the COVID pandemic and the shortage of both workers and parts, which have put things that we used to purchase readily, and we could go to car dealerships and look at many cars to buy. We could go to grocery stores and see many things to choose from. We could buy just about anything at Best Buy, and it was in stock. And now we're finding out that we go to places and we instead find out what it is they have to sell us first before we can decide what it is we want to buy. things are in short supply. When things are in short supply, the price goes up because more and more people want to buy that thing, and it's getting harder and harder to find. So used cars were one of the first things to be the bellwether of this rising price for shortages, but it's happening all around. It's happening with food. It's happening at the supermarket. It's happening with just about everything. And some of that, the Republicans would claim, as the result of too much easy money in the United States, with substantial money being poured into the economy by the government, which of course was a trend which was started long ago. Donald Trump definitely poured lots of money into the economy by reducing tax rates. We've had ever since the recession in 2008, and then the pandemic, we've had subsidies being fed into the economy by the government to try and prop up the economy to keep us from sinking into a deep recession or to pull us out of the recession of 2008. So we did lots of things over the past 12 years that have created a basis for which you could say that there's been a substantial supply of money that could drive prices up. But they didn't really start going up until we ended up with this shortage situation, the shortage caused by the supply chain kinks, as well as the shortage now supply caused by the Ukraine war and energy shortage. And these shortages have really aggravated the situation with respect to inflation and come closer to creating something which is pervasive in the economy, in the United States at least, and maybe across the world, which is an expectation on the part of the people that prices are going up. That's the beginning of an inflationary spiral. And unfortunately, we seem to be in the grips of that. And so how do you get over an inflationary spiral? What do you do to shed that? And that's what the Federal Reserve is there for. It's there to be an instrument to control inflation by essentially taking money out of the hands of the buyers. How does it do that? Well, it raises interest rates. It's also doing something else. It's selling off its huge inventory of mortgage-backed bonds and federal debt. And by selling it, that will cause interest rates to go up as well, because the bigger the supply of debt that is being put into the market, then the higher the interest rate that's being charged for it. I think we're headed for a break here. We'll be back for more of this palaver chatter. Any of you want to call in on any of these subjects, please feel free. We're back. Earl Ingram, I'm Sandy Williams, sitting in for Earl Ingram, the Earl Ingram Show. Earl's not going to be with us today. You folks are going to be duty bound, I guess, to try and listen to me.
It's such a punishment now, Sandy. Thanks for tuning in here on 101 FM, The Shaw, as well as Oh my goodness. See, I'm brain farting. It's 5:40 a.m. and 101 FM The Shaw. Please call, text us. You can join the conversation, 844-967-2789.
So, Sam, I've been talking about the economy. And what have you noticed in your pocketbook? Have you noticed, what do you notice most significantly? Is it the grocery store? Is it your lease going up, or is it all of the above?
I definitely feel the lease one very personally. All of my friends, you know, I just graduated college almost a complete year ago. That's kind of crazy because I see everyone gearing up for graduation right now. So congrats to all of my fellow college students. You made it. It's a weird time, but yeah. The rent has been going up so much. I know even someone moved to Chicago last year that I know, and they said just to keep their current place, their rent went up $1,000, $1,000 a month.
Wow.
So I can't imagine.
And the job market, you know, the government tells us the job market is so hot. Have all your friends who are graduated from college had an easy time finding jobs, or what's that situation like?
You know, that's a... an interesting question, because obviously we do have, you know, we're finding our spots in jobs that are, you know, customer service or whatever it may be, you know, serving, working at the grocery store, you know, like, and there are higher roles, you know, they're full time. There's nothing wrong with that at all, but it's definitely not what we thought we were going to get into after we graduated. You know, you typically hear the story, you graduate, you get a job in the market that you have your degree in, but that is not the case. I am one of very few, and I am very lucky.
And with respect to those people, that are most of your friends graduating with student debt?
Oh, 10,000%. Yes. Yeah. So I am struggling to, you know, pay that rent as well as that, you know, those loans start. I know that President Biden pushed them back a little bit more, which has been very nice. But, you know, you don't necessarily want that looming over your head the entire time. So you try and make small payments here and there when you can. But those when you can moments are getting less and less. And at least in my experience, you know.
Well, in order to pay it back, you have to save money above and beyond your monthly obligations mm-hmm. from your paycheck, right?
Right. And that paycheck is covering less and less of that, you know?
And when you graduate from college, I suspect you're just starting out. So you have to start building up those things. You know, you need to buy more things than someone who's been established for 10 years, like an automobile or like a washing machine or all of those things that might cost money. So I suspect it's hard to pay that debt if you get a job that's not the kind that you were hoping for when you graduate.
Yeah, and not only that, it's just hard to feel motivated. You know, before I found this position here, I was lucky enough to have a very good job. It paid well. I loved the people I worked with, but it just wasn't what I wanted in my life. And I felt, you know, I worked so hard for those 4 years. It made it hard to get out of bed some days, you know? It made it hard to find that motivation to do my job well that I did enjoy to an extent. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, you know, I think this is something that, you know, the student loan forgiveness is being hung out in front of people, and it's obviously a big, beautiful carrot to people like yourself who are coming out with debt. It seems like ever since the millennial, you know, since 2008, that recession was the beginning, I think, of people graduated from college. And, you know, there's like musical chairs. You know, the music stopped in terms of jobs. And ever since then, it doesn't seem like people who have graduated from college have been able to find jobs of the sort that they thought they were going to college to find. Is that what your experience has been?
I think a lot of my peers have been experiencing that for sure. And it is discouraging because when you see those job applications, you see, oh, well, you need 7 years of experience or, oh, you need this, this and this type of training. And as someone fresh into the work environment, I don't have that. And I am not only discouraged from applying to those positions, I feel like I won't even be looked at. You know what I mean?
Well, we've talked about it on earlier shows, but back in the day, most places of employment had training programs for people. You'd get out of college and you'd go and you'd accept a job, and the job was sort of a career type job. And then you'd get moved into a training program that would train you for what it was you were going to be doing. And so you didn't have to have a resume that showed that you could already do what you were applying to work for. Training programs are sort of out the door now. And it seems to me that most training programs involve young people like yourself taking very low paid jobs that are called internships, right? Have you suffered through some internships?
Oh yeah. You're able to get some college credit for internships, but it's not the same. You know, you're not getting that paycheck. You're not. How am I supposed to balance in college specifically classes, social life, finding this unpaid internship, paying my bills, and, you know, balancing it all at once, homework on top of that? Like, it seems very unrealistic from someone who just went through it personally.
Well, you know, these internships, I think they used to call them indentured servants. We have a call, Sam?
Yes, Jack from Milwaukee's given us a call. What's up, Jack? What are you thinking about today?
Well, am I on the air now?
Yes, sir.
Oh, okay. Sandy has said what I've noticed about the economy. And, what I've noticed is the rich are getting richer and the poor are getting poorer. I just saw an article in a business section yesterday in the journal. You were mentioning all these problems we have here. About our COVID-19 and interest and all this stuff going up. Well, Pfizer's profits grew astronomically huge, 61%. So the rich are doing quite well. We had a president here, the Trump tax cuts. He had this wonderful plan where the Elon family, they made them $80 million richer. Diane Hendrickson, I guess she made $50 million richer. Boy, that's great. So, I'm glad to hear the rich are doing good. That's all I had to say. Thanks for the time.
Well, Jack, thanks for calling in. We got to go to a break. We'll talk about that after the break.
Yeah, be like Jack and call in 844-967-2789, and we'll be right back.
Sandy Williams sitting in for Earl Ingram. It's your Earl Ingram show. Sam, tell people how they can call in and the call letters, etc.
Yeah, thanks for tuning in. We're on WAUK 540 AM as well as 101 FM, The Shaw. And you can give us a call or a text here, 844-967-2789.
We just had Jack as a call in. Jack pointed out something I think that's apparent to everybody, which is since 2008, since the recession and then the recovery from the recession, one of the effects, the social effects, has been that those with assets, people who own stock, people who own houses, those people have gotten much richer. And the people who don't own assets, the people who basically have to rely on their paychecks month to month, have gotten poorer, and relatively poorer at least. So, you know, the amount of wealth in the United States that's migrated to the top 1% or the top 0.5% has been extraordinary, surprising to most everyone. And it's proof, I think, that what's really important in this economy, in this sort of an economy, is the ability to own assets. You can make money off your sweat, but it's very hard to save enough money to send your kids to college, to pay for health care, to save for your retirement, and to get everything out of life that you could if you had a bunch of stocks in the stock market that would grow regardless of how many hours you work each week. And that's what's happening to our society. One of the things that I think social scientists as well as economists worry about is the extent to which our society is being changed by this accumulation of wealth by an ever smaller number of people. It's not so much the willful act of the legislature, the Congress, or the president that's caused it, although there definitely have been things that have exacerbated it, like the Trump tax cut in the middle of a strong recovery and expansion period. But Jack's absolutely right. We've got a problem. It's a social problem. It's also a problem for all those people who are left on the sidelines, not accumulating wealth, and watching the rich get very rich. Do we have a caller? Did you say you had CJ on the line?
Yes, sir. CJ from Stoughton's joining us.
Well, good, CJ. Welcome again today. How's your wealth accumulation coming, CJ? Are you sitting on the sidelines, or are you getting a lot of wealth accumulated during this time period?
Well, my house is appreciated. I guess, Sandy, we're living in a Democrat world, and I know I say the same thing, but it's a fact. And the last time when I bought my house was the last time we had the previous worst president. You know what interest rates were in 1982?
Yes, I do. And you know who was president in 1982?
Well, you know what? He combated it, and that's what this new Congress
is going to do. When you look backwards in time, CJ, you don't blame Ronald Reagan for the high interest rates because he inherited the problem, but you do blame Joe Biden after 1 year in the presidency when he inherited the problem.
Well, on so that's, day one, he
it's interesting because we're talking about exactly the same circumstance, really, aren't we? I mean, 1982 was Ronald Reagan right in the first years of his presidency, and you talk about him beating a problem back, and now you've got Joe Biden in the first year, what is it, 15 months, and now it's his problem. Okay, go ahead.
Right. Well, you know what? You say the Republicans warned of inflation. It wasn't just the Republicans. It was Larry Summers who was...
Well, now, wait, CJ, it's okay. I'm going to let you talk, but you put some words in my mouth. I didn't say that the Republicans warned of inflation. Actually, I warned of inflation. I think there were a lot of people warning that the tax cut that Trump was enacting and the Republican Congress was enacting during a period of boom was a highly inflationary thing to do. I think economists warned of that at the time. I'm confident Larry Summers warned of it as well. So I just want to keep us all on the straight and narrow here. There's no question that...
You never mentioned Larry Summers. You never mentioned Larry Summers, Sandy. You only do it in response. And then day one, this president attacked energy independence and the border. And now we have inflation that are record-setting. And the only way to combat it is just like Jimmy Carter. Interest rates were 18.5% under Jimmy Carter. And they went to, I got a land contract at 12.5%. And now another record.
I knew that, CJ, because you've mentioned that several times.
0.5%. And you know what? You can't argue with Santa Claus. He's buying votes by eliminating student debt. That's the only thing he has, just like they're going to create this big thing with the Supreme Court. It has nothing to do with people's pocketbook. It's not going to bring down inflation, and that's the sad place people are at. We're living in a Democrat world, and here it is.
CJ, just slow down a minute. Slow down. Yesterday, the Fed announced a 0.5% interest rate increase. They also announced that they were going to start selling off. That wasn't a record, actually. There have been 0.75% increases in the past. So that's just we can look at history and accurately, at least. But they also announced that they were going to sell off some of their inventory of their securities that they bought during the quantitative easing. And what did the stock market do? And the people who are financial experts, what happened yesterday to the stock market when the government, now you're calling it the Biden government, it's the Jerome Powell Federal Reserve that's doing this. He's incidentally was an appointment of your man Trump. But what did the stock market do in recognition of what happened yesterday? Do you know?
That's because it was less than what they expected. And you know what?
Let's just say that the stock market reacted by thinking that the government was doing the right thing and that it was going to effectively quell inflation. That's what the reaction of the stock market was. So I think we have to give this a little bit of time, because how much of inflation do you think was caused by the bottlenecks in the supply chain and the shortages? Do you think the price of used cars is the result of excess demand, or is it the result of a shortage of cars?
Well, it has to do with supply and demand and equipment.
It has to do with supply primarily, doesn't it? Doesn't it have to do with the supply of cars?
He had a commission that was going to solve all this, didn't he? I believe it was months and months and months ago that he said it was going to supply this. You know what they did to hide the boats? They moved them at least 50 miles offshore, because we still have a supply-demand problem. And this
you say the supply of boats is an offshore problem. Most of the American automobile manufacturers make their new cars. In the United States. Yeah, they're made in the United States, aren't they? The U.S. Manufacturers.
A lot of parts are created overseas, and you know that. And, the deflection that you do, Sandy, continues, because who's the president, who's the control, and who caused this?
I promise you, I'm not deflecting. What I'm really doing is trying to figure out who caused it. You, on the other hand, have reached a conclusion as to who's caused it without looking at the facts or the evidence.
Just look at the chart. Look at the
two different. It's two different ways to look at the world. You're connecting dots by simply saying this man is president, and so he's caused everything that's happening right now. And meanwhile, when you looked at history, you weren't willing to attribute that same sort of causal connection to Ronald Reagan. CJ, we'll talk tomorrow. I think it's good that you call in. I think it's good that we have these conversations, because I think people need to think through this stuff. And I guess when you call in, I'm hopeful that we can talk through these and try and figure out exactly what causes what, because that really is the right question to ask. Why?
Santa Claus.
Thank you. Thank you, CJ. Thank you.
With Santa Claus.
We also have L.A. Tom on the line. So, what's up, L.A. Tom? What's on your mind?
Well, first off, we the people are the government, and we must never forget it. And that includes you too, CJ. We're all in this together, you bozo. also, I am a proud FDR Democrat when it comes to policies of the president that was elected four different times in this country and saved this country. And CJ, the word is called democratic. If you can't have the simple respect to call the Democratic Party by its name rather than McCarthy's name, Democrat, you're an idiot. And you know what? I have no time for people like you that can't even respect enough to have a conversation by calling people by their name. Maybe I just call you Jay, or I should call you C. How's that, buddy? I am so sick and tired of, first off, the main problem in our government is money and politics. That is the biggest problem in our government, whether it's on the Democratic side or it is on the Republican side. In order to get elected in this country, you have got to have money in order to run ads, which, of course, the corporate media is behind this whole thing as well, because they need money for advertising dollars. The bottom line is we the people pay the taxes. We the people should get back a return on investment on our money that we put into the coffers of the government, not the military-industrial complex. You know what? Once you blow us all up, we're all gone anyway. And we already have enough military might to be able to blow us all up thousands and hundreds of thousands of times. I would like to see there be a relief in terms of student debt and make it zero for every borrower that's out there. I paid my student debt. I don't have an issue with the fact of dividing and conquering those that did and didn't pay their student debts. If we got all these people coming out of college right now debt-free, it would actually free up the economy so they could actually spend money into the economy, and we would be flourishing like we never flourished before, instead of the big banks and instead of these high interest rates that these students pay. When I went to college, it was 3% interest rate. I bet you now it's 17 to 20%. So I am for we the people, including you, C, including you. So you start calling us the Democratic Party, I'll start calling you CJ, if that's really even your name. Maybe you are too much of a coward to actually say your real name on the air.
Well, we need to take a break right now, but we'll be back. If you want to stay on the line, you're free to do that. Hi, this is Sandy Williams sitting in for Earl Ingram on the Earl Ingram Show. We've got a couple of callers in, and Sam, how do other people call in? What's the information they need?
Yeah, thanks again for joining us here on 101 FM The Shaw and 540 AM WAUK. You give us a call. You can even give us a text and I'll screen you and we'll hear what you have to say here at 844-967-2789. And we had Tom on the line with us.
Hey, Tom. So before the break, you were talking about a lot of things, and it's things you've talked about before, but it seems like it's coming at a time when there's a confluence of, you know, a bunch of issues are joining right at a junction point. We've got inflation. We've got the war in Ukraine. We've got student loans. We've got a lot of things that are driving our policies. Yeah, but you know, the one thing you talk about a lot is the fact that the people are the taxpayers and we need a government that delivers back to the people what they need. I've spent a lot of time on this show talking about child daycare, about sort of the giving the birthright to everybody born into this country of an equal opportunity to participate, which would include child daycare, would include health care, would include free accessible education of a high quality. And you know, if we did those things, it seems to me that our country would get everyone off, each generation off on the right foot. And we wouldn't have, for instance, this student debt problem that people are now looking at and trying to address. We wouldn't have this healthcare problem like we every time we turn around, we've got a huge issue that's associated with it. COVID uncovered a huge problem with our healthcare system. We have a retirement problem, which might not be a problem if we had everyone participating effectively in the economy. So that the reason I mentioned this is because you mentioned the fact that we spend so much money on our defense. And my view is that one of the horrors of the Ukrainian conflict right now is that we've got everyone in Washington talking about increasing our defense expenditures at a time when our defense expenditures are ginormous, and at a time when those defense expenditures seem to make it impossible for us to address things like child daycare, preschool education, maternity leave, all the things that would need to be addressed if this country was really focused on families and family values. So I do appreciate your mentioning. And the other confluence I think that comes in there is money and politics, which of course is behind a lot of what the policies are that our government enacts. And if we have a problem with our government policies, we probably have a problem with the extent to which there's money in politics. And money in politics has been aggravated by, the Supreme Court decision, Citizens United. And now we're on the eve of another Supreme Court decision, which has the potential to turn our society kind of inside out. So, you know, we had a decision which happened kind of quietly as far as the press was concerned, Citizens United, which in retrospect has had a huge effect socially on our country and politically on our country. And now we're on the eve of another Supreme Court decision. And so I have a question in my mind, how well the Supreme Court, which is a highly revered institution in our country, how well is it going to weather the fact that in the past 25 years, it's rendered decisions which have kind of turned our society inside out. So I appreciate you bringing these things up because I think they're important.
You mean the nine officials that are nine kings that were never even elected by the people? Yeah, I know. And also the two presidents that elected six Supreme Court justices that never even had the majority of the people voting for them. That's another thing to remember.
Well, I mean, the Supreme Court...
Go ahead.
The Supreme Court was a kind of a carefully conceived institution which has been relatively effective over its life. I mean, it's constantly been every 25 years, it's taken part in a very controversial decision, going all the way back to Plessy Ferguson and a number of others. But now we've got a situation where the Supreme Court is manned by through a process of nomination and then consent and affirmation by the Senate, and that's obviously had a thumb pressing heavily on the scales by the nature of the process that particularly the Conservative Party has used for confirmation. I guess we have another caller. Sam, we have another caller.
Yeah, we also have Debbie calling in. What's on your mind today, Debbie?
Thank you. I would like to look at the younger generation in terms of economics and their future. When you think of the generation that is graduating with tremendous debt, we know that most of the jobs in the future have not even been invented yet or come about yet. How can these young people prepare for a future that they don't know? And many of them are from lower income families that didn't have the advantage of a nest egg that middle income families receive from their parents, no debt, etc. So whether somebody is low income or of some means, how do we help our young people with a future that is so uncertain?
Well, I think that Debbie, you hit on a key problem. There was a change in our economy. It used to be that when people went out into the job market, they were looking for a job they might hold for life, and the employer that they went to talk to was prepared to train them for what was required to carry out the job, and then they would receive on the job training, and they were not required to enter the job market knowing everything they needed to know to get their job. And I think Sam pointed out the problem. Current graduates, when they go out on the job market, need to have a resume that shows that they know how to do everything that is required in the job. And the first question that the employer asks is, what's your experience? And how can I be sure that you know how to do what we're going to be asking you to do? And of course, when you come out of college, it's very hard to have that. So we've got, you know, this problem of internships, and it really is sort of an indentured servitude that's been set up as a process for people to meet the requirements of their resume, and people are taken advantage of in that regard. In this question of the rapidly evolving technology and how it is that the jobs of the future don't even exist today, and maybe the technology that's required or the knowledge that's required doesn't exist, that has to do with, and that's existed all the way along. When we got out of school, when I got out of school, we didn't have laptop computers. We didn't have all the sorts of technology that we have today that facilitated the employment that we needed to know how to do in order to be employed. We learned along the way, and we evolved along the way. And some of the reason we were able to evolve like that is because we were trained well in school to do critical thinking. And we weren't trained to do a specific job. We were trained to learn how to think analytically so that we could move forward in the face of problems that were presented to us. And one of the things that I think is worrisome about today's notion is that people go to college to get trained specifically for specific jobs. And in that process, they might lose this capacity for analytical thinking, for facile evolution in the workplace, so that they can be nimble and employable well into the future. And I think you've highlighted something that is a problem in our education and is a problem for the students getting out. Sam is nodding her head, because it is a serious problem for young people. And you're right that they're going to need to be very facile and nimble and either being trained to do that. And well, you've identified some problems we can talk about after the break. We've got a break coming up now.
Auntie, use me up. Talking about you, let me burn. It all depends on what you do. It ain't